Greetings and salutations, everyone, to the February board meeting for DSROA. Cade, would you mind giving the opening prayer?
I can do that. Dear God, Holy Father, we're thankful for this day. We're thankful for the opportunity to gather as lot owners out of Deer Springs Ranch and members of Deer Springs Association. And as the board, please help us this time to discuss the things we need to and be able to make progress at the ranch, keep everything safe, and improve our experience out there. Father, we're also in need at this time of water, so we ask that they'll bless us with precipitation to help increase our water stocks and be able to survive through the summer. We ask for all these things in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
All right, thanks, Cade. All right, roll call. I'm Brent Fulmer, Lot 117.
Larry Clarkson, 76.
Mike McNichols, 270.
Barry Clarkson, 173.
Ben Clarkson, 56.
Joan Smith, 269.
Michael Jordan, 67.
He's 121.
Got a Stephen Laurie on here that I don't see a lot number.
Hi, Stephen Laurie. We just bought in October, I think it's like 221. It's up on coming around the mountain.
And what's your last name?
Gothard and Hopkins. G-O-T-H-A-R-D for Steve. And Lori's last name is Hopkins. H-O-P-K-I-N-S.
221 is the correct lot number.
Thank you.
What was that again? 221?
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome, Steve and Lori.
We're actually in Kanab, and we're at a friend's house. And, of course, their dog starts barking as soon as we turned on the mic. I'm sorry.
Finally, I've got somebody on a phone number that starts with 213. I don't see a name or anything.
Yeah, that's Whitbeck, 274.
Tell me that again. Sorry.
Israel and Joanna Whitbeck, 274.
Can you spell your last name for me just real quick? I'm sorry, I'm really slow on this stuff.
Yeah, W-H-I-T as in Tom, B as in boy, E-C-K, Whitbeck.
Perfect. I appreciate it. Sorry, I'm a little slow on this stuff.
No worries.
Dan Wirt, 28.
Looks like everybody that I can see.
All right, if that's everybody, then Barry, you're up, but it's the official minutes there should read, or the official agenda should read January meeting minutes, not October. But if you want to do that and then do your updates and bids for signs, go ahead.
Just real quick, since I've been out of the country, I did not get the meeting minutes for January meeting prepared, so I'll present those in the March meeting for approval, along with the meeting minutes for today's meeting. I apologize for that, but I don't have them written up yet, but I will get that done. And so I just wanted to let everybody know that, and I'll get it taken care of. As far as the waiver discussion, I just wanted to open the discussion. I was curious, and hopefully, I don't see if Danielle's on here or not. Just curious where we're at on the return of and how we're doing on getting waivers back, and along with annual assessments and that kind of stuff. I don't have any information. I'm just here to ask and see where we're at as far as an update.
So I am on here. I have received 40 hard copy waivers and 14 digital waivers. Some of those are from multiple lot owners. So if you think of, there's about 250 lot owners. So we've received about 20%.
Have you had anybody ask questions about it? Any concerns, or just you just received what's come back in so far?
Zero questions up until Cade. A lot of people have just been filling in NA on the trust side, but we can look at doing that differently. I myself didn't go through and find one, but I haven't had anyone tell me that they have issues or concerns.
And do we have a plan as far as follow up? Obviously, we were hoping to get everything by when assessments are actually due, which we still have a little time. But what's the plan for follow up to be able to make sure that we get a much higher level than the 20% we have so far?
So right now, a reminder is being sent out each month with the monthly meeting information. I'm considering them delinquent with the annual assessments, which is March 31st. I plan to send out a Adobe to each individual who has not sent it in. That will automatically send them reminders weekly, unless the board would like that done sooner and on a different frequency.
I think that sounds like that will work. Would you like my help in scanning the hard copies that you received and coordinating or creating a list? Is there something I can do to help to track this as we move forward? Or is there anything else I can do to make this easier?
I don't think so. I'm already creating to help the cabin reservationists with members that are up to date. So I'm already putting in information as they pay their dues. So I will just create, I have a field where I will mark that they have signed, and then I just need to take a day and get those scanned in so that it's not a big deal. I have not scanned them in yet. So I just have them in a pile and in a file folder online for the digital ones.
Okay. Yeah. I just when you get to it. That was really all I wanted to follow up on. Are there any questions or concerns from the membership as far as that goes? And just wanted to note Dirk joined us. So, any questions or concerns, Jeff?
So when you reserve a cabin, the waivers are automatically attached to that. Is that going to be counted as the annual signing, or that separate?
It's a good question. I haven't reserved a cabin, so I'm not sure exactly how that looks. I just signed my waiver digitally and sent it back in. Danielle, can you comment on that?
I've actually got a couple comments on that.
Okay, go ahead.
So from the reservationist perspective, so it is making a reservation there. I think we could capture that, but I think we're going to have to ask Cody or Andrea to download a copy of that. We ran into an issue where we changed the waiver, and when we changed the waiver, it erased the acknowledgement of all of the other waivers in the reservation system. So I think if we're going to rely on that one, and I think it's another way to capture them, but if we're going to rely on that, we're going to need to download it and put it wherever we're storing all the other electronic ones just so that we have that. But it's the exact same waiver. It's requiring them to sign it. But I did want to make everybody aware of that one situation of when we updated the waiver, all the previous waivers, the acknowledgement was gone. And I don't think we're going to update the waiver anytime soon, but we will. And I think Andrea may already be kind of pulling those off, so we'll need to follow up on that. And then the second comment that I would make is probably just me and being kind of stupid, but when I got the invoice, I paid attention to the invoice in my email, did not look at the waiver in my actual mail because I knew I paid it online through the other. And then I was kind of missing the actual request for a waiver and all the other links that were even in the annual meeting notice. I think it would be good to send out at least one email just specifically for you know, here's the waiver. It's expected to be signed every year. Explain what it is. Give them the link in order to sign it, and just make it a little bit more obvious to the members that there's more to do. Because I kind of lost it in the whole assessment thing, but that may just be me. But that would be a suggestion: is let's send out one email specific to the waivers, asking everybody to sign, explaining why they're signing it, if in case they weren't in the meetings, et cetera, that way, and see if we can get a little bit better response there. But based on the feedback of the cabin stuff, I would think if they've signed it once, it doesn't matter where or how they signed it, as long as we've got it stored and achievable, I would think that those would count. But that's just my opinion.
I agree.
I'm going to jump in real quick, and I kind of disagree, just because people who are signing the cabin ones, it's not always the lot owner, and it's not always with the name of their trust. I would still like each lot owner to fill out theirs individually, regardless of the cabin reservation one.
Okay, so I guess the question is there a way to coordinate the those that make cabin reservations as far as owners? We also want guests to sign, obviously, on a cabin reservation, but we do want to make sure that all owners sign up. So I guess with a separate email, as Kate is suggesting, we should be able to capture a lot more owner signatures there. But if owners make cabin reservations, I don't think there's a need to have sign both, but we're going to have some coordination there. Is there something I can do to help make that happen, or Danielle?
Barry, just to be so you're aware, it's not going to keep track. Every single time you make a reservation, it's going to require somebody to sign that waiver. So the reservation one, if they're reserving it, the person reserving it's going to sign a waiver there. And Danielle makes a valid point. It's not going to have the name of the trust, the other that way. So maybe we just need to keep these two separate efforts. Like Danielle's saying, we have the one effort, which is trying to get 100% of the members to sign the main waiver once a year, which was what we put in the bylaws. And then we're kind of double covering ourselves if they do the automated one, but trying to merge the two together. I mean, I don't know. It might be kind of annoying to the members I've already signed on the cabin when I reserved the cabin, but if we kind of make a distinction between the two, that you'll always sign it regardless of having previously signed the other one, but we are trying to get one for the year as well each year. It might just keep it simpler than rather than trying to say, hey, you've partially signed, you didn't put your trust on the cabin one, we need you. I don't know. It just seems like that's going to be complicated to manage.
Jeff, you got something?
Yeah, I just wanted to correct something Kate just said just for the recorded record. It was not put in the bylaws. It was put in the rules and regs.
Agreed.
Yep. Okay.
This is Lori Hopkins. Can I make a comment?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
As new members, so we had our first notice for our dues. Because we were new, I decided to take the time to read through, but I did the same as the gentleman. I think it was Cade. At first, I set that document aside. We live in Florida currently. And we get documents like that every year with our taxes and things like that that are optional. And so a lot of that stuff just gets tossed. But because I was a new member here, I didn't want to make a mistake, so I filled it out. I initially set it aside and was going to send it in with Jeff because I wasn't real clear that it was a requirement because we haven't gotten all our bylaw information and all that to go through yet. So I would think that the mentioning of an email or something to let everyone know that this is a requirement, that we need to have it done every year. And in my previous life, I was an accountant. As an accountant, I would really think that it would be easier for you folks if you kept this separated between the dues and the cabins so you don't have to, you know, mix them. Because somebody paying their dues isn't necessarily ever going to rent a cabin. So, sorry, I'll let it back.
Nope, good point. Good point. I think our effort here is to try to make sure that we get as much coverage as humanly possible. And so this is a new process as far as getting getting all members to sign a formal waiver, although we've had them in the past. Anyway, it sounds like we still have some work to do to make sure that this happens.
So are we going to try and send out an email? At bare minimum, I think we send out an email that's waiver specific, and maybe that's where you can help out, Barry, is if we come up with wording for an email for Danielle to send out and explaining why we're doing it, and here's the link to sign it. And I'd prefer to capture more digitally. It's going to make you and Danielle's life a whole lot easier if we can get them to sign digitally than.
Oh, I agree.
Together, so.
It sounds like Danielle had planned on sending one out on the delinquency date, but I would request that, and I can help or I can do this. Danielle, I think we need to send one out the beginning of March, the end of this month, a month before as a separate email. So can you work with me on that so we can get an email sent out the end of February, 1st of March, that is specifically just related to waiver?
Yeah, if you'll just send me the wording you'd like, I can get that sent out.
Perfect. I'll do that. And so that's all I've got, unless anybody else has other suggestions, questions, or concerns.
Okay, you were going to talk about the signs. I don't know if you were coordinating with Ben or.
I just had a question. I know we talked about signs for non-members accessing the ranch, as well as a whole sign project of which Kate provided me a directional signs and a whole bunch of stuff. My question just in my discussion, Kate, did you happen to get a pricing on the non-member signs, or was I supposed to do that?
I think Ben was going to get the pricing on the non-member sign, but he was waiting, too, for us to finalize the verbiage. I don't think so we might want to take a minute here and just finalize the verbiage and so he can proceed forward to get quotes on the sign. But, Ben, I don't know if you have any other to add on that.
No, that's exactly. Barry, do we have agreed? I've seen the kind of two different versions of the entrance signs to the ranch to notify non-members of, and give them some direction. There's been some discussion of a longer wording, but that's where I understood it was circled back to it for kind of a legal review to make sure it was adequate. And once we had that, then.
Dave, didn't we decide on verbiage on the sign when we went back and forth, had a discussion with Dan sometime in October?
It had never been finalized. The board itself has not voted on the actual verbiage and agreed to it. I mean,
do you happen to have access to where you could pull that up and do a screen share and so we can look at it and possibly just discuss it today?
Let me see if I can hurry and find it real quick.
I might have it. I'll look as well. Brent?
Yep.
While we're looking at this, why don't we trail this to later in the meeting so that we can see if we can pull up a screenshot of the proposed language rather than taking everybody's time while we look, and then we can revisit and possibly review and vote on the sign language today.
Okay, we can move that down to the brief report, and either you or Ben can address it at that point in time.
Perfect.
But let's move to Treasurer's Report and Mike.
Oh, all righty. Treasurer's report. Obviously, it's beginning of February, so we haven't done a whole lot in terms of the profit and loss statement yet for the year. We have some revenue coming in from the annual dues and not a lot of expenses yet. So the P&L today looks really good. Today we have $147,000 in the checking account for the association. We have a little over $5,000 in savings. We have a little over $62,000 set aside from previous years in CDs that are earning interest for future projects. And we have a little over $8,000 set aside in our annual meeting budget. The only real concern I have from a financial standpoint is if you look at the P&L on the roads budget, We've already spent more than half of the amount of money that we had budgeted for our contract services. A little bit of that was paying an invoice for work that was done at the end of last year, and part of it is for work that's already been done at the beginning of this year. We actually just talked about that in our executive meeting prior to this meeting, and we're not going to make any adjustments to the budget. But everybody needs to understand that it is possible that at the end of 25, we may end up going over budget on that particular line item in the roads category. If that happens, it will be done intentionally because the work is needed. And the expectation is that we will either pay for the amount that we spend over the budget, either by achieving savings in other areas or by using some of the money that has been set aside in the past. Other than that, I don't have any concerns or significant observations about the P&L at this point. But I will open it up to everybody. If you do have any questions about the P&L that Danielle sent out, now's the time.
Just one request, Mike. Can you send me email me the balances that you listed off as far as checking, savings, and the other balances, so I can include those in the meeting minutes?
Yes, I will.
And then I think it'd be a good idea to update, since it has to do with finances, the progress or discussions we're having moving forward on the reserve analysis, and just updating everybody on that we're working on it. We have a request for a copy of that's coming due next month, and we will meet that deadline and just kind of give them some background there on what we've discussed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So especially for the new folks and anybody that hasn't been part of our previous discussions, the current board is in the process of creating a reserve analysis. Essentially, what that is looking at any anticipated major future expenses for the ranch and then making sure that we have enough money set aside in advance to be able to handle all of those expenses without having to do any kind of a special assessment to all of the owners. So, for example, let's say, you know, a building roof is going to last 25 years. You know that in 25 years you're going to have to replace it, so you want to have money set aside in advance so that it doesn't surprise you in the future. That same logic applies to lots of things that we have at the ranch. Obviously, the cabins, the fences, the water system, the water pumps, lots of things. So, what the current board is doing is looking at all of the items that have, you know, basically a shelf life. You know, the expectation is they're going to last for 10 years, and then at that point they'll have to be replaced. So trying to literally list every single item that we can identify on a spreadsheet, anticipate in advance how much is it going to cost to replace it, when do we expect that replacement to occur, and then making sure we have enough money set aside to be able to handle those expenses when they occur. So that's the basic premise of a reserve analysis. We're in the middle of putting that together. We'll have the preliminary report done at the beginning of next month. And this is something that will be looked at and updated on an ongoing basis, you know, for the life of the ranch, for as long as the ranch continues to operate. So that's the basic explanation, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
Jeff got one.
Jeff.
I wanted to kind of go on record to try to clear up some verbiage about the reserve study and the reserve fund. From what I've gathered, a reserve study is required by state law. However, a reserve fund, so basically a savings account sitting aside, is not required. So they're kind of two separate things that seem to be wording like it's like we have to have this reserve fund when we don't actually have to have a reserve fund. We do have to have a reserve study. So I just wanted on record to kind of clear that up for people so they understand what's being done and why.
Jeff, well, Jeff, since we're talking legal stuff, I'll turn it over to Barry.
Yeah. Jeff is, it's going to sound bad if I say technically correct, but he is correct. So the reserve analysis is required by state law, and we're working on that. But a reserve analysis makes almost no sense at all to identify the needs without actually providing. And the requirement will come at some point in time. Other states have already adopted it. So we're being proactive, Jeff. You're right. We're working on the reserve analysis. And we're also working on being able to fund the needs that we find within the reserve analysis. So as what we believe to be a smart business practice. So while you're correct, this board is moving forward not only to do the reserve analysis as required, but also to do the actual funding or begin the actual funding. The reason why it's not required immediately is when the law was implemented, then the legislature recognized it would take some time for people for associations to start setting aside money. I think that ultimately in the next 5 to 10 years, it will become required. So we're just trying to be proactive. But you are correct, Jeff, for sure.
And it comes sort of down to semantics because we do have in the budget, we have line items for ranch house battery replacement. We do have savings accounts. We do have savings bonds that can essentially just be labeled reserve fund. So we are essentially already doing that, but I just don't quite understand.
I think we're just trying to formalize that a little bit better, Jeff, just so you as a member would actually understand which fund is actually considered reserve fund. There are requirements when you do establish a reserve fund that those monies need to be set aside for items in the reserve study. So that's one of the concerns with the board, too, is to make sure that we leave funds in the general operating fund that we can have more access to, because once you do establish a reserve fund, there's a requirement those be used for items in the reserve study. Now, that or reserve analysis, whatever we're calling it, but again, that analysis can be done every year. It can be reevaluated. You guys just need to kind of know, from our perspective, you guys need to know how much we're setting aside into that reserve fund and then what those monies will be used for and when they plan to be used. So it gives you a little bit more transparency related to that.
And I think, Jeff, you're absolutely correct. The previous boards have done a good job in trying to set aside money and have money, some money in savings to cover emergencies. And it will be those same funds that will, some of them will be adjusted to be part of the reserve fund. So technically speaking, then the previous boards have done a good job in trying to be wise stewards and make this work. We're just going to update some of the language to make sure that we're compliant with the statute as well as, you know, wise business purposes and make sure that we have money so that we don't have to go back and do a special assessment if something pops up. But you're right. We've been working towards this for a long time, just not under the specific language or the specific names that are now set out in the statute. But you're right.
So then currently, let's say we have, I don't remember how many, we have like five different savings things going on. So savings account A is going to be labeled as reserve fund for this, this, and this, and that's all it's going to be used for? Because currently, the savings accounts, other than I think the annual auction one, can basically be used for anything ranch related, which includes fixing stuff, right? Fixing stuff is what's going to be called out in the reserve study, but it can also be used to work on roads or upgrade something. So is that what you're talking about? Like you're going to have a savings account A is only for these purposes. Savings account B is only for these purposes. Like, is that?
So there will be a reserve account which will identify specific money that's related, and those monies, those funds, as provided in the statute, can really only be used for those purposes. The rest of the money that's in savings will continue to be held and used as needed to improve roads or whatever else comes up. So there, we're using the same money, but there will be a designation of an account that is set aside as the reserve fund account, and it will be there and protected against some of these emergencies that may come up, so that we know and the membership knows that there's money there to fund those situations if they arise.
Clarification.
Sorry, you were cut off.
I said thanks for the clarification.
Well, I think we'll have more clarification going forward with you when you start seeing the proposed amounts in each of the accounts and stuff. That way, I think that'll answer a lot of your questions, Jeff.
Yeah, and the main thing I want to emphasize is simply the fact, and I appreciate Barry mentioning this is not something new that we're doing now. I mean, this is something that's actually been thought about and worked on for many, many years, setting money aside for future projects because we know, it's going to happen. And the bottom line is, we don't want to have some big $100,000 expense show up this year. And then we say, oh, we don't have any money to pay for it. So now we're going to go to each owner and say, now you have to give us a check for $2,000 so we can go do the thing that just happened. So the bottom line on all of this is to look out for and protect the interests of all of us as DSR owners. That's what it's all about. Okay, that's it for me.
Well, no, it isn't. You've got a cabin committee volunteer projects.
Oh, I tried to get out of it, Brent. Okay, so we did have a cabin committee meeting this past week, and those of you that were around a year ago will remember that we had a couple of volunteer weeks last year where we had lots and lots of DSR owners come out to the ranch and volunteer their time and their effort and their money and their equipment, and we did a ton of work on all 10 of our cabins. And it was a lot of fun, a big success. For those of you who were not around, we had a total of, I don't remember the exact number of projects we had. It was almost 150 individual projects for all 10 cabins. Some of them were minor, like, just cleaning up trash around the cabin. Some of them were major. Some of them were significant safety concerns. For example, we installed 48 brand new smoke and carbon monoxide detectors in all 10 cabins, where only 6 working detectors had existed prior to that. So last year we had a couple of volunteer weeks, got a ton of stuff done. I think we got like 100% of the must-do safety items fixed, and like 80% of the like-to-do nice items fixed. Very successful, a lot of fun. Well, we had not decided yet until earlier this week if we were going to do volunteer weeks again this year or not, and we decided that instead of doing volunteer weeks like we did last year, that instead what we're going to do the coming year in 2025 is we're going to identify some significant projects that we can identify and schedule use the ranch funds to, you know, help buy supplies as needed, and then schedule individual projects and ask for volunteers for those projects. So, for example, Cade was responsible for securing, I think it was like $2,500 worth of new playground equipment that is still sitting somewhere, I think in a trailer or something, that we have $2,500 worth of new playground equipment that we are going to be able to put together and install down near headquarters. That's going to provide a really nice brand new play area or expanded play area for the kids. So that would be a project. Another project might be to sand down and restain a deck where the wood is all old and splintered and needs some maintenance. So this year, 2025, instead of having volunteer weeks, we're going to have probably half a dozen different volunteer projects that we're going to schedule throughout the year. And then once that project has been identified, once we've purchased any materials that are needed for it, we'll send out an email. We'll let everybody know what's being done and when it's being done. And then anybody who would like to come volunteer their time and effort to participate in that particular project will be welcome. So that is the plan for the coming year. Any questions?
Will there be an email or some way to identify those projects so those of us members that aren't regularly on the ranch can volunteer? How do you plan to communicate those projects when they're planned and what the needs are?
The current plan is to just send out an email in it well enough in advance that people can plan their time accordingly. Yeah, you know, so hopefully at least a month in advance for each project. We do not have a complete list of projects put together yet, but that's probably a good idea. We should probably go ahead and just decide on, in the next couple of weeks, decide on all of the projects that we want to tackle and then try to spread them out throughout the year. So that's a good suggestion, Barry, and we'll follow up with the cabin committee to put that list together. So we'll send out the initial email that I send out regarding the very first project. I'll try to include a list of additional projects that we are targeting for the rest of the year to give people some time to plan for them in advance. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, I think having the dates for the full year would be nice just so people can plan.
Yep.
Start reserving cabins and all that kind of fun stuff if they're going to come or whatever. So.
Yep.
Okay, is that it?
That's it right. For me.
Okay. Did you get my email about the suggestion for the rattlesnake petting zoo? If you didn't get it, I'll rewrite it and send it out.
That's not covered in our waiver, Brent.
All right. The property manager report I'm going to give because Cody's wife, Andrea, had her back operated on, and he's been down there taking care of her, and she just had the back operation got, you know, put off and rescheduled. And so, anyway, long story short, he's not here. The garden cabin, he has disassembled the garden cabin. We decided to work on two of the bathrooms on the east side of the garden cabin, and he's got those tore apart. As soon as he gets back, he will start replacing and repairing things. We've got cast iron, we've got poly, we've got copper, and we've got galvanized and PEX that we're going to replace down to PEX and ABS and a couple of other things, but that's one of the things. The other project that he was going to be working on, but Jeff and Tina actually did, and that is we removed some fence down there, and we're putting in boulders to replace that fence because it was rotten. And then we've changed one of the fences down there to make access behind the ranch house easier and yet still keep the road out to the well field isolated so the cows can be, the longhorns can be moved back and forth on that. And so, anyway, as far as that goes, that's what he would report on if he was here. On water, and because Dirk isn't here, I'll take that, and you other board members can jump in if you want. I don't know exactly what Dirk had.
Dirk is here, but you can give your part of this first.
Dirk is here. Take the floor is yours, or the teleconference, or whatever you call this thing.
First of all, on the agenda is the NRCS update, and we're making progress with the NRCS. They had some deadlines where we needed to get some maps and different things into, and I think the main thing to report is we applied for grants under two different programs. One's called the EQUIP grant, which is stands for something like environmental improvements. And under that, I think we're lined out to receive planning and then hopefully associated budget to go with it for doing fence updates and repairs. We can only do fences where we own both sides of the fence line. And so this wouldn't give us funding, for example, to do fence repairs out in an area where we butted up against another BLM permit owner. But it would help us with fencing mostly internal to the ranch and cross fencing and things that are needed. The other items are help with controlling different weeds, invasive species of weeds. We have a lot of thistle issues. And improving rangeland, doing some brush treatments and reseeding. And so we're on track for those types of things. Also trying to get some pipelines installed out to the far reaches where we need to have stock watering that we've been hauling water to. The areas that we could not qualify for because of some odd technicalities, one of the things that we put in for was to improve the well-filled irrigation system. And you have to basically show that you've historically been irrigating an area in order to qualify for funds, because they're basically funds to show that you're improving the irrigation system. And so if we want to qualify, we've kind of kept our application open and deferred it to next year, but we will need to figure out some way to at least do some amount of irrigation in the well field this year in order to qualify for next year. So we'll need to discuss that quite a bit to see what makes sense and what can be done. Unfortunately, with the winter that we're having, we're not in a very good situation to try to use irrigation that would normally
be an option to show that we've diverted the ditches and done some irrigation that way, but it's not looking to be a very good spring runoff year at this point. And that's all I have on the NRCS certified water operator duties. I've talked to Bart Batista. He's willing to continue on for being our certified water operator and maintain essentially the administrative duties associated with that and coordination for reports and interface with the state. And he's willing to do that. I've discussed with him putting a budget for $100 a month for him to do that. And I would forward that, I guess, for approval to the board. And the probably last couple areas, and Brent can chime in on this because he has more knowledge, is that we're updating with the state the water testing map, and they've tentatively given approval of that, and it would include 5 testing stations that would be dedicated testing stations that I think are on order, and maybe Brent, you can jump in and give us more detail on that now.
Yeah, I can. State has approved. I put together a rudimentary plan. I thought it was going to have to be a little better, but anyway, Bart submitted it to the State Division of Drinking Water. They said looks okay with us or for us, and then so we've ordered these water sampling stations. 3 of them are going to be easy install. 1 of them is going to be a more difficult one. But we have some general location. We have general locations for them. And then we will be taking most of our tests. Well, we'll actually be doing 2 tests on the lower system. We'll be taking a routine sample off of these sampling stations, which come directly off the main line. And then we'll be doing investigative samples off of various locations in the cabins to make sure that we don't have problems in any one or all of the cabins, and no problems on the main line. But our big problem was in the past is we've been failing water tests because all of our sampling sampling points are dead end lines. And the one thing they tell you, you don't want to have your sampling point on a dead end line. You want to have it off your main line. And so these new sampling stations are to be in place for that various reason, or exact reason. So anyway.
And one other thing I would add is basically with Bart's role in regards to, keeping our certified operator duties as I described, we would possibly need to open up things for somebody else to do the on-site testing and things of that nature. And so that would leave us some budget to look at what we want to do there. And that's something that I think mainly Brent has been doing, but it would probably be good if we had some additional resources in that area.
Is that it, Dirk?
Yep.
Jeff had a question.
Go ahead, Jeff.
So, Bart being a certified water operator, are we going to write up contracts with him so that we can't just be left hanging in the lurch if he gets mad about something and quits in May? or something along those lines? So is it going to be like annually contracted, multiple years, anything like that?
Yeah, I think we'll plan on working that. One thing that I would say is, given his past reputation and what he's done at no charge, I'm not, you know, too worried about that. But we will look at firming that up so that we have a mechanism to deal with paying him.
Yeah, just level set expectation that our last contracts have been allowed either party to cancel with 30 days notice. I don't know that it's going to stop somebody from quitting necessarily, but I think it's good to have a contract for that.
Down those lines, I think, Dirk, it'd be appropriate for us to make a motion, if it's right, to make a motion to approve $100 a month to pay Bart to serve as our certified water operator. That's about what it would cost for somebody else to get certified. So it's money in the bank if we can do that, and I move that we approve that.
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
So, but Barry, you'll work with that, getting that put into a contract too, right?
Yeah, now that it's been approved, I'll work with Dirk. It'll be a one page or a half a page that just says we are engaging Bart to handle that stuff and that he's an independent contractor and this is the pay. So Dirk, just let me know when we can get together and draft that up. It won't take very long to get in place, but that way then we're all documented up.
Sounds great.
And we will be making that contract with his company, who he wants. That's how he wants to do it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
So kind of along those lines, though, we also talked about possibly compensating or doing something for the water collection or the testing side of things. Have we finalized anything on that? Is there more discussion, or where are we at with that?
I would say no, we haven't finalized, but we probably need to do that put that on our list of tasks. And maybe as Barry and I work on drafting this document, we can also draft a document for on-site work, and then we can put that out and see if we have interested parties.
My understanding is that Cody's participated a little bit in testing. Brent's certainly done his share of testing. Tina and Jeff have also participated in testing. I've seen submissions. So what I think we do is identify the need and then put it out there and see who's interested or who would be willing to, and then we can kind of discuss it from there.
Formalize that a little bit more.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay, anything else?
Dirk, I have a question. In my meeting minutes from December, we talked about having one more connection completed to the 40-gallon tank. I'm just curious to close the loop. Did we get all connections or another connection to the 40-gallon tank completed by the end of 2024, or where are we at on that?
Larry can jump in on this, but Marco Parado's connection is complete. Now, I sent Mark Giancotto, I don't know how to say his last name, an email asking for permission to go onto his property and test the pressure at his water vault, which is down just off the road, and he gave me permission to do that. But we have his, and we still have Rod Johnson's, but Marco's is complete.
So Marco's complete, so we only have two left to worry about as far as the overall project?
Correct.
And one of those, we're hopeful the test showed that the water pressure is sufficient that we don't have to add or modify the system. Is that right?
Both of those.
Yeah, both of those. If we it depends upon the – we're going to test the pressure at a location on Rod Johnson's and then on Mark's lot. And if we get the 20 PSI that we need at that location, we're going to move their meters to those locations. And that should satisfy the Division of Drinking Water and the Health Department.
Perfect. All right, I got it in the notes, so we're good. Sorry, I just had to ask that question to complete the loop here.
Yeah.
If what we're trying to make work works, it will end up being a few hundred dollars to fix Mark Giacottos, or however you say his name. We may need to redo part of Rod Johnson's line to eliminate an air bubble and a cavitation problem to maintain the pressure. So it may end up being $1,500, $2,000 fix, but it's not going to be a $5,000 expense that we've already racked up. And so it's going to be a considerable savings if we can do what we want to do on those two.
Perfect.
So, Larry, how are we going to test those locations?
We're actually going to use a pressure test at a lower elevation, both which will be on their lot. So DSROA, we will own the pipeline to that point where at what point we meet the 20 PSI criteria, and that's where we will install the meter, and then they will be the owner and responsible from that point on, and we will be the owner and responsible to that point.
But is the line actually going through that point now?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And so we're going to have to dig up the line and test it that
way?
I think
initially we're going to go to the point on Mark's line where he currently has a faucet or something that we can check pressure.
Correct.
If that meets the pressure, we will dig down, remove the meter from right off our main line, reattach the line at the corp stop, and just simply move the copper setter, the meter yoke, down to the point of 20 PSI and reinstall it, and we're good to go. Similarly, at Rod Johnson's, his meter is old and defective and kind of a mess, and the line going from there north climbs over up a hill before it drops down a hill. And so our plan there is to remove the bad meter, connect new line, dig it, excavate it to the point where it flows downhill constantly instead of climb and then drop, and reinstall a meter base at the 20 PSI location, which is a pump vault that he already has down lower.
And Dirk, to answer your question, there's one vault where we're going to test. We'd like to install the meter. That's already existing, and all we have to do is disconnect the pipe and check the pressure at that location.
Yeah, so we probably need to wait till we're kind of out of the freezing weather conditions to expose the pipes and test them there.
It would be best. We have some, you know, now that we got the big jobs done, we've got some flexibility and some time to do that.
Well, just to add to that too, didn't Bart provided some pressure maps that we felt justified this as well, and just your experience, right? So we're pretty positive that those will hit that 20 PSI mark.
Yeah,
you don't know what they test.
I'm positive. I think Larry is as well.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Okay. All right. We're going to go into a brief report.
Hey, Brent?
Yes.
Brent, real quick, couple of quick questions. One for you and one might be for Danielle. Do we have a deadline from the state on when we have to have all the work done and completed, and are they going to come out and inspect it?
2026.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was it?
2026.
Oh, so next year, not even this year.
Correct.
Okay, and then second question, at the end of last year, I know we had a significant credit on the books with our plumbing supplier. Did we ever get a check for that credit, or do we still have a credit?
We still have a credit.
Okay.
Yeah. It's Thank you. It's around $16,000 right now.
I think I need to go buy some culverts.
Yeah.
Just teasing.
That's it for me. Thanks.
Okay. All right, Cade, you're up, and I specifically mentioned here just kind of to bust your chops.
You wanted to call me out and bust my chops, yeah, for losing bolts.
Did you find my
marbles. I think that I've lost the bolts. Bolts and marbles are all gone. But I did take pictures of the bolts. I probably should have pulled one off for comparison. So next time I'm out, I may grab a bolt just to take with me. And it shouldn't be too hard to get some of the bolts. But, Mike, it would be nice to have a deadline as to when we're going to try and get that put together just so I can – have a deadline to get bolts all ordered, but that's my plan, is to order some more bolts and get that ready for when we want to put it together.
Where is the equipment right now?
It's right there in the parking area by the water stuff where all the trucks and stuff.
Okay. Right near the J station.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could you have stuck the baggie of bolts like in one of the tubes or anything?
I put it somewhere safe. I mean, I checked around the tubes. I checked in the box. I vaguely maybe even remember giving it to Kurt, but I don't know. I've checked all my locations. I can reach out to Kurt again and see if he remembers me giving it to him. But at this point, I'm considering I'm lost and plan on just trying to get some more.
You can go down and look in, like, all the tubes and all that kind of stuff unless you've already done that.
I haven't looked inside the tubes. I don't think I remember shoving them into the tubes. But I did look. We had the crawl-through area. That's where we put a lot of the smaller stuff, and it wasn't with those. But, yeah, if you want to look inside the tubes and stuff, that'd be good.
Hey, do you have a picture of what it looked like before it was taken apart, or do you have, like, a manufacturer's?
Yeah, I have pictures and videos. I've tried to find plans, and I was not able to locate plans in the city we bought it from didn't have plans, but I do have pictures and video of that. So.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's going to be a giant puzzle piece is basically what it's going to be.
Anything on the roads?
No updates on the roads unless Larry's been out there with all the dryness, but I think he's been traveling, doing anything, so I don't have any updated projects there. But I do have the sign stuff if we want to hurry and go over that.
It should be fairly short, so if we can do that, I think we just read through it, take comments, and then have a vote and possibly get this moving forward, because I want to get the signs printed and installed before the season comes if we can.
Yeah, I'm sharing right now. This last one I think is the shortest one that kind of met all of our obligations, and we can go through the other ones if we want to. Let me make it a little bit bigger.
Sure, right, I'll read it out loud for those of you that aren't on video so you can hear. It just says, notice, private roads on private property. Leaving the road is trespassing. Speed limit on all roads, 25 miles per hour. OHV use requires a signed waiver with DSROA available at HQ. And then there's a website, deerspringsranch.org, for more information.
I think the only question I have is, the waiver that we currently have, is that what we would have at Deer Springs Ranch for them to pick up?
No, we anticipated or talked about having OHV
specific,
very, very short, because there's lots of stuff in the member waiver that we have that really don't apply to people that are just using the roads or riding ATVs. So I thought we had discussed that, and I'm happy to put that together and present it to the board in the next meeting. But it would be fairly short, just acknowledging speed limits and the liability related to operating on the roads.
Yeah, I think we've gone back and forth on that. I just wanted to clarify on that. So that would be one requirement before we put the signs up to actually have that available to them. But there's a bunch of other ones that were slightly different, longer, whatever. I don't know if we want to spend the time discussing those, but
And we can look through those. There were longer versions, but to have it on a sign, you know how much people actually read signs. We wanted to have it as effective as possible. Jeff, you got a question?
If that's the one you go with, it says the waiver is available at HQ. Is there somebody going to be at HQ to accept the waivers, or it's a self-service thing, or how does that work?
It would have to be self-service. It would because we can't anticipate somebody's always going to be there. So it would have to be, at the time we anticipated, or at least I anticipated, they would be included on the bulletin board, which no longer is there. So we'll have to figure that out as far as implementation.
That's on our project list with Mike, the volunteer list.
Because I just, the way it's reading, it requires a signed waiver. So,
our anticipation that nobody's actually going to follow through with that, but yeah, we need to make it available in case they do try and follow through.
Yeah, it needs to be self-serve, and it does need to be available at headquarters without a person having to handle that. And if we are lucky enough to have somebody actually come follow through, we want them to be able to sign. But the main thing is to provide them with notice that's a requirement, and acknowledging speed limit and other, and that they can't leave the road. Those are the big things that we want to make the public aware of.
Well, the self-service, I'm just kind of imagining like a flyer box with blank waivers and another flyer box for completed waivers or something on the bulletin board.
Yes, something like that. Any objections, any comments, because like I said, I'd really like to finalize the language so that we can get the process started, because sign will take a little while to get made and then even longer to get installed. And if we don't get started, it'll be halfway through the season. Mike?
My only comment is everybody on this call understands what HQ means, but, you know, not everybody understands what HQ means. And especially if it's intended for people that are coming onto the ranch for the first time or just passing through, I guess the assumption is they're going to go to deerspringsranch.org and figure out what HQ means, but I don't know that that's a reasonable expectation.
Good point. I think we probably should expand that language because, as we all know, while you're on your phone riding on the ranch roads, you have no service. So we provide them with the website, but they're not going to be able to access anything on the website while they're there. So we need to spell out headquarters and possibly, we need to put in ranch headquarters or expand that language so it's clear.
Yeah, you might even just put headquarters, you know, 3 miles ahead or something. That might not be a good solution for all of the signs if they're going to be posted at different locations. But depending on when they're posted, you might be able to say at headquarters, which is, you know, 3.7 miles ahead or something like that.
Well, this doesn't go on the Skudumpah Road. It goes on all the roads going off of the Skudumpah Road.
Yeah, there are five entry locations where people can leave the county road and enter on ranch road. So they will be posted on each of those locations. That's why I think we have counted 5 entry points to the ranch. And I think we can indicate Deer Springs Ranch headquarters, not necessarily specifying how far ahead, but we can include that on the ranch, on the sign.
So here's another suggestion. What if we, HQ to me kind of makes sense, but what if we made and like I mentioned to you guys, I've got a new CNC that I can maybe start playing with this a little bit. But what if we made additional signs that we put right underneath this that says Deer Springs Ranch headquarters and whatever instructions from that point in order to get that back to their four of those, just so that each one of these signs has the main sign. Because I think it's going to be cheaper for us to get the main sign completed if it's all the same verbiage. And then if we did something a little bit more specific to tell them where headquarters was from wherever they're at each of those locations, we can maybe do those in wood or something like that. That's a little bit more specific.
Well, and I don't know that you need to tell them from where they're at so much as just, you know, right off of the south of Scudamore Road or something like that, where it is.
Is there a, there's not a mile marker or anything like that on, or an address on Scudamore, is there?
Well, there's the ranch sign and arch that gives them that indication. So if we indicate that it's just off of Scudamore Road, I think that's probably good enough. But I'm not resistant to having a directional sign just below this that gives them directions to headquarters or a map, something like that, that we can certainly add to it. So not add to the sign, but add to the post.
Yeah, I think if you need anything more than that, you probably need a map.
All right, part of it is going to become a little problematic simply because, for example, the Slide Canyon Road leaving the county road, the Scudamore Road, is really not – I mean, we could potentially put up a sign there, but we're going to have to – kind of work with the BLM a little bit because that is, at that point, it is not our private road. And so the sign that we can put up where it says, you know, Deer Springs Private Road is clear up at the beginning of
basically the intersection.
The intersection, yeah, basically. And at that point, somebody's already traveled several miles off the county road, and for them to backtrack then and to go to headquarters, I think we need to discuss and talk about what locations are we trying to put up signs and what are we trying to guide people to do. If they're not a ranch owner, really the only non-owner traffic that we should be tolerating is direct traffic through Meadow Canyon from the south end to the north gate and vice versa.
The problem is, as we've discussed this for quite some time in the summer, was we have and we will continue to have non-members traveling these roads unless we put up gates or something. So we wanted to make them aware that it is private property and that they cannot and should not be leaving the roads and post the speed limit so that they know that.
Right.
It would be fantastic if they'd sign a waiver, but that's not going to happen. A question came up from one of the members in the chat that, as to how we enforce this. The main purpose of this is like a warning on a piece of machinery that you buy. It's to take the liability from us and to allow us, if we need to, if somebody goes in and causes some damage, to hold them responsible. But we know that we're not going to stop traffic, and we know that we're not going to be able to force people to go and sign a waiver. It's a matter of doing the best we can given the circumstances. And members are already signing up on a waiver and already know the rules. This is specifically for non-members that are traveling in the area, which that traffic is going to continue to increase. And we want to provide them with enough of a warning as to what are or aren't the rules that holds the ranch not responsible for things that may happen and allows us to prosecute them if necessary, if civilly, obviously, but if the damage is caused and we can figure out or find out who it is, then we have at least a better chance of getting that fixed and taken care of. So I hopefully that this is our best attempt at what we can do short of putting up gates and blocking off roads completely.
Barry, I have a question, and I think anything we do is better than where we've been, and it may could easily be modified. It's not that big of an expense. We just need to get something up before this season. The question I have is stating it's a private road, stating that leaving the road is trespassing, and the speed limit, I agree with all those. Has been a discussion to differentiate whether they're in a 8-passenger vehicle or a Jeep or a side-by-side and getting into OHV language? Do we feel like there's a bigger liability? We want them to know don't leave the road, no matter what vehicle you're in. And I don't know that whether they're on the county road or on our private road, doesn't matter what they're in. They're in a motorized vehicle. They need to follow the top three rules.
Yes, that's why they're the top three, and we don't get to the OHV language until the bottom, because the top three apply to everybody, regardless of what you're doing, whether
you're on a bicycle. Right, but it also somewhat implies that if I get a waiver sign, then I can leave the road. So I'd like to have it the top three things, and if people are riding in some jalopy or something that's unsafe, whether it's on our property or on the county property or anything, getting into trying to overcompensate liability sometimes gets us deeper in liability.
You don't want me to make a living, Ben, do you?
We gotta get
into the nitty gritty, or else I can't start charging people.
I just want to know because a lot of it is people just are unaware of where they're at, and let them know, hey, you shouldn't be here unless you're by permission or whatever. And I would like to, try that. If we had a real OHV abuse and we're trying to say you could come on this road if you're in a windshielded vehicle, but if it doesn't have a windshield, you're not welcome. I don't know how we're ever going to police that.
Can't we just, on that final line, can't we just say motorized use requires a signed waiver available at the store?
Well, I think we were trying to say that only the OHVs required the waiver, because that was the wording that we had previously. There wasn't an expectation to have people sign a waiver for a normal passenger vehicle. Is that a correct assumption, Barry?
That was what we discussed, but as we're sitting here, I don't know why we wouldn't just blanket and say use of motorized vehicles requires a waiver. And I mean, the chances of them signing it are the same, which is next to zero. But it does allow, it does indicate to them that there is a requirement for them to travel these private roads. I'm open to that. I don't resist broadening that language or making it simplified. I'm also not dead set opposed to just having the top three and leaving the bottom part off. If that's the consensus of what the members want to see.
Well, I have a question, Barry. Because it says private roads, so are we going to have signs that designate each and every private road that comes off of a public-private road?
Well, so all
are
of the districts
are supposed to know what's private and what's not private.
Well, so what we're trying to say with this is all of the Deer Springs Ranch roads are private roads. So even though it's owned by the association, those are private roads. So we're trying to put these where I think we've identified at least five locations where you're coming off of BLM, you're coming off of Scoot and Paw, whatever, you're now entering Deer Springs Ranch. Your driveways obviously are private roads as well, but everything from that point on, they should consider a private road, whether it be your driveway or Deer Springs Ranch Road, they're private.
As soon as they leave Scoot and Paw Road, they're on private roads, so they need to be.
Well, like people there who turn off of Scoot and Paw onto Meadow Canyon going up to the forest.
Yes.
Private road or public road?
Private.
Everything that allows public access.
Correct.
We've agreed to allow public access on Meadow Canyon with the county, but it's still a private road. We own the road.
Okay. So then, when we entered that agreement with the county, did we get their approval that you can only drive on that road if you sign a waiver?
No.
Because now you're redoing the agreement with the county.
Well, and if the county has a problem, they'll let us know. I'm not concerned at all about the county telling us we need to take down our sign. But people do need to know, because most people assume that Meadow Canyon Road is also a county road, and that's not correct.
And then what about the road that goes through Johnny Brown up to that camping area that's beyond Lot 1?
As soon as it leaves the Scoot and Paw Road, it's a private road.
Okay.
So, Barry, I would recommend just taking off the OHV so it just says use requires a signed waiver with DSROA available at headquarters.
Okay. And just to move things along, is there any other comments or objections, or can we, with Dirk's recommendation of eliminating the OHV word, can we get this approved so we can get started on making signs?
Make a motion.
I make a motion that we approve the sign as discussed in this meeting with, you know, layout alterations that we'll do with the sign.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Aye.
Cade, can you, no objection. Cade, can you email me this page so that I can include it in the meeting minutes?
Will do. And then one final just clarification. I think we've got multiple options to help clarify HQ, so we can decide that at a later time. I mean, if it's...
Let me ask to be clear. Dirk, was your recommendation to change the word OHV or to take off that line altogether?
My clarification is like he shows edited, so...
Okay.
Requires a signed waiver.
If we're still encouraging a signed waiver on things, I would like to see it say use or whatever require a signed waiver with at Deer Springs headquarters. Nobody knows who GSROA is. Nobody knows HQ. It needs to be plain language that there's a waiver required at Deer Springs Ranch headquarters.
Okay, we can do that. That shouldn't be a problem, right, Cade?
So we want that to
just put Deer Springs Ranch right there with Deer Springs. Yeah, available at Deer Springs Ranch headquarters. I still think HQ people know what that is, but
well, and I
we're trying to fit it on a sign. So
I just want to restate Deer Springs Ranch and the private ranch, not, you know, HOA or DSROA that these people were trying to address. Is going to be more confused. Who's this at?
Yeah, and I'm the one that brought up the concern with HQ in the first place, but as far as I'm concerned, when you say Deer Springs Ranch HQ, that clarifies it. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and you can take out and available if you want to shorten it.
You could possibly drop the Deer Springs Ranch one line down below it to make it all more lined up. Just also, Steve and I often do some hiking around this area, and a lot of times when we're doing some of the back hiking, I forgot what it's called, where you get to where you're leaving the normal trails and you have to sign a waiver, they will just have a wooden box here. You open it up, and it's just a clipboard with papers in it. You just sign the clipboard. Looks like it's been rained on and everything else, but they just want your signature on that clipboard. I'm going to assume that every once in a while somebody takes the papers off the clipboard and puts new ones on. So it could be as simple as that.
We can definitely look at that as a possibility, having a waiver box below the sign. The problem is there's not just one access. There's at least five that I know of that we'll have to monitor.
No, I just meant the clipboard at the headquarters, just at one place, so that they show up down there. But it's just been as simple as a clipboard with lines on it, you know, and you'll see there'll be 18 people have signed before you, and most of the names are half washed off. But
perfect.
Okay, can you take out the word available? And then at the bottom, just instead of say C, put info at the website instead of the word C. That squares it up nicely, I think, covers things. I would still
take out to requires
Okay, I'm good with that. If everybody else is,
I like that.
Hey, me Brad.
Too. Now, Cade, are you saying that your CNC machine you can create that sign?
I don't know. I could. This one's probably a little bit big. I can try and look at it, but I don't. I'm still playing with it. I think I can do smaller stuff. And this one I think needs to be a little bit more permanent, more brighter colors and stuff that way. So just in the interest of time, I'd say let's get this one ordered through a sign company, and then we can look at adding other ones later on.
Ben, do you need anything else to get this ordered once you get it?
Nope. I'll lay it out and look at stuff as far as making it weather-resistant and reflective so that some of it would even show.
What are we talking size-wise? What does this need to be?
12-inch by 18.
12 by 18, I would guess, would be a minimum.
Yeah, 12 by 18 or something like that. That's going to be a, you know, aluminum with a reflective lettering that's, you know, again, easy to read black lettering, but that looks kind of official. I don't like the bright colors or something that looks more like a BLM or a Forest Service sign.
Yeah, I'd make it at least 2 feet wide, not a foot wide.
Oh, I was thinking 18 feet wide. Yeah, no.
Well, and I think the notice, if we make that really big and bright red too, you know, there's stuff we could do with the sign layout to make it.
Yeah, that could be a larger font.
Yeah.
Isn't there legal sign requirements for the signs to typically be legal? Like a normal street sign has to be certain sizes, or a normal stop sign has to be this and it has to be that?
There is in the county ordinance for subdivisions and stuff. Again, some of those are maximum requirements to not get things too big, but I will match it up with lettering just so that it's readable. They have a font size from a typical road. We got to go big enough so that it is readable and doesn't look like we're just trying to hide something in the bushes to relieve liability.
I think it's going to just depend on the font size. Like if it's 3 inches or something like that, it's probably going to determine the size of the rest of the sign. Anyway, right. Somebody else can talk.
We have private road signs like on Broad Hollow, and I know some other roads have it, and it's only maybe 6 by 10. And it says private road in little letters. I don't know why this would have to be gigantic.
Well, again, like I said, because there's legal stuff. So like if there's a no trespassing sign like this and a hunter happens to be hunting, if you don't have a properly posted, properly colored sign, it's not enforceable. So there are state regulations that require certain sizes, certain colors, certain these other things for certain purposes. So that's why I was just curious.
We'll cross-reference that with King County Ordinance, and again, most of the sign producers are very familiar.
Sounds good. Okay, I'm done with my area if we want to move on.
Okay. You done, Cade?
Yep.
All right.
Wait, Larry. Before we go to Larry, I have a question for Cade on roads. So I know we've talked in the past about the possibility of doing basically neighborhood road projects. For my purposes, obviously talking about Slide Canyon, I know there are at least 3 or 4 people who've already expressed interest in participating in a neighborhood road project in Slide Canyon, and there would probably be more if we put out some kind of a notice or request. So my question is, how do we put together some kind of a proposal that would hit all of the things that you and Larry and, you know, everybody else thinks might be needed as part of a neighborhood road project? I don't think we currently have anything in place. I know Broad Hollow, you guys already did a neighborhood road project, and I've got to believe that that was really spearheaded by the local owners, but I'm not sure how to go about it for Slide Canyon.
So, Larry, you can add on to this, but this is kind of what we've discussed in the past, and I did have a form put together at one point that I need to look and see if we can get that put back together on the website that maybe we need to add to, but what I need from a proposal perspective is what section of road, you know, where you plan to do the project, what type of improvements you want, you know, are you anticipating culverts, et cetera, that way, the members that are going to participate, and then what the expectation from the SROA was from a contribution type, so that we can just kind of start through that. And then we'll formalize the project in an agreement, you know, coming back to the board, et cetera, you know, related to that. But I, bare minimum, I need to know the area that you want to do it, what you're anticipating to do. You know, are you putting in new culverts? Are you grading? Are you adding gravel? You know, what you would like to see done. And then we can consult with you as well. If you just want to say, hey, we want to do improvements here, then Larry and I can come out and consult with you and say, we recommend five culverts or whatever that way. But the biggest one is identifying where you want stuff done and kind of what you're thinking to improve, and then who's going to participate, so that we, and what the expected participation would be. But I understand you may not know all of that without meeting with us. So if you wanted to say, I want work here, can you guys meet with us and let's come up with a plan, and then we can start to figure out what the board can do versus what the members can contribute and kind of go from there. Does that answer the question? And Larry,
yeah, it's just hard for me to understand the starting point. I think a starting point would be, you know, and maybe we do it in conjunction with next month's board meeting, you know, to, you know, when we send out the notice for the board meeting, maybe we send out something that says, you know, following the official board meeting, there will be a neighborhood discussion regarding road improvements in Slide Canyon. If you're interested, you know, make sure you're there. It's, you know, there's kind of a, you know, how do you even get started? I mean, I have no idea who the people are up in, you know, upper Slide Canyon that might have needs or desires. And I don't even know who those people are or what they want.
Well, and that's where I think our focus is, trying to just do Slide Canyon. That's a very big project. I mean, Larry and I have identified projects that the board thinks or that we think need to be done in Slide Canyon. But if we're expecting members to come and, I mean, we can tell you what some of those are, and you guys can see if you want to contribute funds in order to prioritize some of those. But I'm expecting you guys to say, I've got this problem area. Just like Broad Hollow did, if you've got a problem area that impacts 10 lot owners, you would get together with those 10 lot owners and say, hey, do you agree this is a problem area, and come up with a proposal and kind of present that. So I know Michael Jorgensen and Kevin were working on putting something similar together with a proposal that way. And again, if you need help for us to identify how to resolve the problem, we can definitely provide that recommendation. But I think the members need to identify a problem area, and then based off of that problem area, you can identify the areas. But try to get, I don't think you're going to get all of the members in Slide to contribute to one project, if that makes sense. But you might be able to get 10 to 20 Slide members in an impacted area to get together. And I don't know that we would formalize that as a board to do that. I would expect the Slide members to get together that are impacted by that and come up with a plan.
Let me suggest one thing, Mike, just, and I don't know if this is possible. Hopefully Danielle's still on here, but I'm assuming that you could provide text of a notice that said, hey, I would like for this to be emailed to the owners in Slide Canyon, so that an email could go just to that group and say, we're anticipating, or there's a problem in this area. We'd like to find out if anybody else is interested in participating in helping the Slide Canyon neighborhood on this area. Danielle, are you still on?
Yes, and I mean, that's essentially what we did for the Johnny Brown Water Company.
So you have the owners in different neighborhoods where you could select out their email addresses for a direct mailing related to roads or a different project in that neighborhood, right?
I don't have them by neighborhoods, but I have them by, like, lot owners, so I could easily.
Okay. Well, I'm guessing there's a way, Mike, that you could say, I'm interested in doing this. I'm a single lot owner. I'd like to send a request to all the other neighboring lot owners to see if they're interested in this. But it would have to go through Danielle to get that email out. And then you'd get a response, or you'd have the rest of the owners or a lot of the owners say, nothing, or I'm not interested. So that's how I would start, is a neighborhood direct mailing type of thing.
Okay.
Okay. Well, and to be honest, I've done something similar in the past for the cabin committee. And, you know, I think it would be a lot of work for Danielle to just try to segregate all of the lot owners in Slide Canyon. But instead, we could just send out an email to everybody and say, if you're in Slide Canyon, then reply to me.
Okay.
So that would be another option.
Well, yeah. And I have had some members express an interest in coming over to help Slide Canyon, even if they're not, you know, actually there. So from a volunteer perspective, if you're asking for volunteer times, it's probably not bad. I don't know if they're going to be as willing to donate funds, but time-wise, I have had a couple of people say, hey, we're all one community, right? So we should help each other out with each other's projects on different
sides. That is great. That is great to know, Kate. I had no idea that that was even an option, so thanks.
Well, I just had a couple members that have mentioned that they would like to come and do that, so.
All right, I'll work with Danielle to get the ball rolling.
Okay, anything else?
Kate, you can take down the site.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to stop sharing. It's appeared off my screen. Oh, there it is.
All right, Larry, you're up, and I needed to tell you, great job on the road between the cabins. You filled in that ditch on the west side, and every time we have a gully washer, that kind of exposes both the electrical line and the water line going down to the HQ. I think you've got it buried deep enough now, it's not going to be a problem. But anyway, go ahead.
I don't really have anything. I think I reported last month that we, on wildlife for our deer, mule deer hunting fund, we're on the same program as we were last year. This will be the last year of this cycle, so we should be good money wise coming from that program. I'll order fish for the ponds to be delivered somewhere close to the beginning of May. Possibly a little earlier this year because we aren't going to have so much mud and recovery from winter. So typically we stock May 1st. I may bump that up to April 1st. We'll just see what the weather does. I have done a little more cleanup. One thing I wanted to talk a little bit about was in conjunction with Dirk, I talked with Dirk and Kevin Ballard a little bit on the agricultural stuff, and there's an area, I don't even know, I want to say maybe 3 acres, 2.5 acres behind the ranch house that's been separated for years from the normal cattle access area, and we have grown a pretty good stand of crested wheat in there, but it has also become the kind of catch-all garbage spot of broken equipment, rundown equipment, broken vehicles, discarded fence posts, wire, trash piles, wood piles. I hauled 10 different truckloads of wood in there, oak and cedar, to be cut up to help Kurt years ago, and I don't think any of it ever got cut up, so it's just big piles of usable firewood. And so in moving equipment in there to start correcting the big erosion that was cutting right up through the middle of the field, I went ahead and did quite a cleanup, and I hope I didn't make Cody or his boy mad because they had gone out in the middle of the crested wheat and made a little motocross track, which I definitely want them to know. I'm not against motocross tracks or somewhere to go ride, but that is not the place to do it. Right there below the cabins and the noise, maybe the Half Moon Reservoir is a great motocross track to go ride in where it's away from anybody's disturbance and dust and noise. Anyway, there's still quite a bit of there's limb and trim / garbage wood behind the ranch that we talked about potentially burning or putting in the wash. But as I cleaned it up, there's still a lot of usable good oak and cedar firewood that I kind of pushed all into a bigger pile to move it so I could move dirt and clean up and move vehicles. I moved the horse trailer over close to the laundry trailer because it has been used as storage to some extent. I did notice, Brent, maybe you know, the storage, the tool trailer that we bought from
Mariah's brother.
Mariah's brother years ago. It looks like somebody's drug it under a tree and ripped part of the top off.
That's the reason Danielle contacted me about licensing different vehicles. Uh-huh. And so anyway, but one of them was that enclosed trailer. And after looking at it with the top of it tore, and I don't know how worldworthy it is, so I told her not to bother to get that one registered. I just wanted the flatbed and the dump truck.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't anticipate that we're going to need to use it anywhere on the road. We may use it to move material or tools back and forth on the ranch itself.
Yes.
But we might want to look at it and see if there's something we need to do to keep any water damage from going in where it looks like a limb damage or something on there.
Right.
And then I did not move. I don't know if that old other flatbed trailer there is. Who did that belong to?
That was given to Kurt. It was full of trash. Jeff and Tina and Chris Nelson and I, we threw all the trash in Chris's trash trailer, and he took it to the dump for us. But that belongs to Kurt. But I think he gave that and that Jeep, which got moved, to Kevin Poole.
Okay.
Kevin moved the Jeep, but I don't know. But officially, it's owned by Kurt.
Well, I will follow up with Kurt and Kevin both and see who wants it. I would like to start establishing kind of a policy at headquarters of not just becoming garbage collectors. If there's a specific tool that we use, we need to have identified a place that it gets stored and maintained and used. If it's not something we use, we need to get rid of it, not just collect it and line it up down the field with the rest of the garbage. Some of the members and even board members don't go out there enough and around enough to know what's hiding behind sagebrush number one and what's hiding behind sagebrush number two. Anyway, I started all this to say that field is still, that corner, that south end of the field is still a perfect place for us to create almost a seed nursery. And if we run a little bit of water, maybe off of the cattle watering trough we've put in or something, that we can water a little bit down there, I think we could grow enough crested wheat seed to start replanting some of our areas. And Kevin and Dirk both pointed out that crested wheat is probably not the best if we go into a big reseeding project. And I agree with them as far as cattle feed and other crops, there's better stuff. But crested wheat has historically done great at Deer Springs through horrible drought seasons and good seasons to be a good cover crop. And So that's my plan, is to continue correcting that erosion, get that little silt sediment pond finished with my drop culvert, and then clean out the rest of the garbage fence, you know, just tangled up wire and messes that so we have easy access for Cody going around there to do laundry, in and out, not to make it so difficult on them. Other thing I wanted to discuss a little bit was Jeff and Tina did some cleanup on the proposed future playground site. And while I've got bigger equipment down there, I'm going to go ahead and level from the volleyball court the area that the garden plot was in. And I think that's where we're talking about going ahead and setting up the new playground equipment.
That works for me.
I can level that out a little bit better. Still all contained within what was the old wood fence. And that part of the fence isn't in horrible shape. Over time we may replace it too, but right now it's doing okay. Other than that, I can report that kind of along the lines of our neighborhood road projects, some of the owners in Juniper Hills have committed to and started working with me on widening, correcting the waterways, and shaping of the road extending beyond Broad Hollow, beyond Jeff and Tina's driveway, going on across towards Slide Canyon, and that's going to be all at their expense. So that's a benefit to all of our Deer Springsers that go back and forth on that the Slide Canyon Broad Hollow cutoff road. And in doing so, I have also bladed and reshaped Meadow Canyon Road from the gravel pit to the Broad Hollow turnoff, and I'm within a day or two of actually having the rock crushing separation road base machines functional, and we'll go ahead and probably recruit Jeff to be a dump truck driver and maybe another one or two, and we'll gravel re-top that section from the pit to Broad Hollow and maybe even tune up Broad Hollow. And I'll go ahead and say again, Broad Hollow's road improvement only happened because of the Broad Hollow people. They spearheaded it, they funded it, they coordinated it, and so that whole thing got done by the Broad Hollow neighborhood group. Other areas of the ranch need to be spearheaded, instigated by the neighborhood group and assisted by DSROA, helping them plan and design and put it together, and then use DSROA funds and equipment as we can to make it all happen. Other than that, I don't think I have anything else to add that I can think of right now.
Okay. Mike, do you have anything else?
Yes, I do. Just real quick, since I'm over cabins, and that includes the RV sites that we now have available for rentals, Andrea had a couple of questions about the RV sites, and I'm not sure of what the answers are or should be, so I just wanted to bring up a couple of questions, not just for the other board members, but for everybody on the call. The first question that she asked is, because they manage the are involved in managing the reservations, not only for the cabins, but also for the RV sites. And one of her questions is there a capacity limit for the RV sites where we might charge more? I think the answer to that is no, but I didn't want to make that decision on my own. So has there been any discussion in the past about any kind of a capacity limit for the RV sites?
Are you asking people, the number of people that could come and camp?
Or number of RVs, yeah.
Well, it's actually E, all of the above. Is there a limit to the number of RVs? Is there a limit to the number of people, limit to the number of cars? What happens if they want to put tents up in conjunction
currently,
with the RV site?
Currently, Mike, we have three functional RV site pads that have water and sewer connections. So I would say we have the capacity for three separate RVs, trailers, self-contained mobile home or motor homes, whatever you want to label as an RV. There is additional area there that people could pitch a tent if they wanted to. I don't know that somebody's going to come down in one RV and then bring 30 cars. There's plenty of space there to have if a family came to camp in an RV and they had another pickup truck and a side-by-side or a few vehicles. I don't see that as any kind of a problem, or we have to set a limitation. It's going to just be governed by the logic of, yeah, you can't come down with a fleet of 200 cars, but
Well, so this is kind of how I think we've looked at it in the past, is if you're actually using the RV site, that has to have a reservation and
right.
An option there, right? But I don't think, because the RVs are going to determine how many people can, like from a people perspective, we are charging, like, I think it's $10 extra per day per person for the cabins, but that's because we're providing supplies, et cetera, for the cabins, right? We have had an opportunity where they used up the RV sites, and I think they had another couple RVs, and those RVs camped at, quote-unquote, camped, and so we followed the camping rules with those. So if it's a member camping, they're not charged anything, right? And that's a camping area. But if they're a non-member camping, then there would be a camping fee is kind of what we did with those. So just if they're not connected to the RV site, they're then camping, so they follow the camping rules. And if they're but if they're actually using the RV site, then they have to have a reservation for that RV site is kind of how I would rule. And I think we've got rules to cover all of those scenarios if we treat it that way. But okay. I don't know how the board feels.
I'm in favor of fewer regulations and restrictions, and if there is a problem, then we'll deal with it. I mean, that's how I would prefer to go forward. But I didn't want to say that without, you know, getting input from everybody else.
Also, something to know, Mike, you maybe already know, but the big infrastructure is in place for 6 RV pads.
Right. Yeah.
So with limited, I mean, very little additional investment, we can continue the sewer line and the water line to include 6 pads instead of 3. But as of yet, I don't think we've really maxed out of the 3.
We haven't.
We did right. At one time. We were using more for the work camper program, which has kind of fallen completely dormant. And I would like to think that that would be something advantageous to the ranch if we had somebody that picked that up and promoted it a little bit more, looked into it. I just don't know enough about that community to pursue it.
Right. Okay, that's it for me. Thank you.
I just had a quick comment. I feel like we had a member that made an RV reservation and had an extra car coming with them. And because of their use on the septic and water, it was $10 per extra vehicle.
No, we had a member that was going to camp additional RVs there, and I think we charged a camping fee for the additional RVs. I don't remember anybody that had an extra vehicle that was coming. But I
okay, maybe, know,
unless
maybe
Andrea has done something
RV.
With that. But yeah, I think it was the extra. We had somebody that was planning on doing a party, and they reserved 2 spots, I think, but then they had some that wanted just to camp without having hookups, and we charged the camping fee for that.
So, Cade, if somebody has questions about it, like what's okay, what's not okay on the reservation system, do they talk to you? Do they talk to Andrea? How does that work?
They're probably going to contact Andrea first. If Andrea has questions, they'll talk to me. So I can, from a reservation perspective, I'm kind of over those right now, but I can work it through with Andrea. But that's what we've done in the past is, and I think what we may need to do is set up some camping stuff on the reservation site, because currently the reservation site doesn't have any camping options. We did have Jeff and Tina went through, and when we had that group of RVs coming that wanted to just kind of camp, they went and kind of mowed down additional areas so that they would have a place to put their RVs, right? So they kind of cleared out some of the brush and stuff there to facilitate that. So we do need to kind of, if we're going to maintain a place for them to do that, we need to recoup the cost a little bit if we can.
So Jeff and Tina, you guys just went out and did that voluntarily? You guys are amazing.
With my own equipment.
You guys are amazing. Thank you.
Yep.
Hey, that's it for me.
Okay.
Move on.
Barry, you're up. Anything?
I have nothing other than what we've already discussed, so we're good.
All right, great. Dirk?
Nope.
Yep. Okay, you're done?
Yep.
All right, Ben?
And get this unmuted. That, we covered the things that I needed to move forward in my area.
Okay. All right. We're opening this up for members. Any member got anything to bring up?
There you go. This was Steve Gafford. We're new owners, and we actually tried to drive up to our property yesterday, and it got pretty greasy, so we turned around. We're still trying to figure out the road conditions and what type of access we're going to have to our property. So I'm just opening up a general, you know, trying to get general information on. We tried going both directions. We're up on. We're up on lot 221. We initially tried going up past the Forest Service, and once we got to where it started going up the hill, there must have been a spot where the sun was not getting to, and it got real greasy, so we just decided to turn around.
Okay.
Probably a good decision. Just high level, winter access is not we're seasonal access, so normally we'd have 2 or 3 feet of snow that you wouldn't even be able to get up there. So we don't try and maintain the roads from a winter access perspective. So you've got really March to, October-ish, depending on. So this is an unseasonal warm where you do kind of have access to some of the lots. But, yeah, I think and – just in general, anytime things are wet, our roads get super, super slick. We are trying to improve some of them with gravel, et cetera, but anytime roads are wet, we discourage any type of movement just because you're going to do more damage to the roads than make progress. So, but yeah, just high level, we're a seasonal area and we don't guarantee road access. We're not going to clear snow. We're not going to do stuff that way. There are some members that live here year-round, and it's their responsibility to clear the roads. So you will find some of the roads cleared, but that's at a member expense to be able to live up there year-round. It's not something that the association's doing.
Yeah, and that's our – we've contacted – you know, we've run into some people out there that have been very forthcoming with information and stuff, and we'll be in touch with those people, too, that do – some, I think, live out there year-round, but we understand it's somewhat seasonal, and that's what we're trying to figure out because we come out here different times of year. So, but, yeah, and that, I was thinking if we find, like, it almost looked like this one area was just a wet area that if we had gotten past that, we probably could have kept going. But, you know, we can find those areas and just see if maybe a little bit of gravel would make it accessible, you know, more times of year than not or whatever.
Yeah, you can identify those. And I will tell you, Larry and I drove out some of the roads. It was probably for these latest snows and stuff that way up to your lot. Well, it was about a month ago. But we were able to get out there about a month ago, but things constantly change, right? So there is – we had a member up that area complain about a narrow, scary spot, but the two of us couldn't identify that location. So if you notice that or notice other problem areas, just let us know. And we'll, especially if it's safety, but if it's, you know, shady mud because the hill is there, we're not going to be able to remove the hill. But if, you know, if we can do some improvements, again, neighborhood projects as well, if we can get a bunch of neighbors to go together, haul some gravel out there, make things a little bit better. We'll try and address it that way.
We saw that they had gone through
the help.
Say it again.
Did that help your with your question?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Any other member?
Yes, this is Dan Wirt. The latest Southern Utah News has a front page article that may affect members and or the DSROA. It's the front page article. It's Utah House Bill 0048 to charge fees to property owners adjacent to wildland property. And for those who haven't seen this, I can share a screenshot here. And I think that the resolution here is good enough for everybody who wants to screenshot this and read it. Let's see. There it is. Can people see that?
Yep.
Yeah. Can you put it in the chat, too, so we can download it, Dan?
I'm not sure I know how to do that. I'll try. But you can also just take a screenshot right from here and read it.
That's true.
So I don't know how this is going to affect the DSROA and or individual members, but it looks like another added layer of bureaucracy and expenses possible. But apparently this bill has been passed, and it's now in the implementation stage. And when you read this short article, you can see that Kane County is not happy. So Kane, quote unquote, Kane County officials have expressed concern over the potential ramifications of the bill for the citizens of the county, as a high percentage of county properties, especially those dedicated to agriculture, are WUI, which is high risk wildlife urban interface property. My first impression would be to argue that there's nowhere in Deer Springs Ranch that is has an urban interface. So we're clearly not urban. Anyway, there it is.
Thanks, Dan. And along those lines, I need to call the counselor back. They mentioned that special improvement district stuff is coming back up again for the fire. So I need to get more details on that, and I'll try and bring that back to the board. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff, especially with the California wildfires, things are changing a bit, right? So,
well, regarding the special service district, that my last recollection is that the county commission is going to establish a special service district for the what is that community just east of Kanab, the Vermilion Cliffs, is it?
Yeah, fully the boat got shot down, and then they redid it, and she said there might be some impact to DSROA, which I don't know. I don't know if they're trying to include us again or if they want to know if we want to be included again or what with it. So I need to reach out to her and see what
she – Reach out to who? Reach out to who?
One of the county commissioners, Myers?
Myers.
Yeah. So she called me.
Myers was real hot to include Deer Springs Ranch in the original proposal, but mm-hmm. I have not heard that they're trying to do that again. I would certainly be interested in knowing whether Myers is trying to push that again.
So all I know is that she called me and said that something was the redoing it, but that she didn't clarify what the impact of DSROA might be, so I need to clarify what that is. And I'll get back to you, Dan, too.
That's all I have.
Yeah, I think, okay, just from, I've been heavily involved in, you know, here in Kanabin, just East Kanabin, the Vermilion Cliff area, and some of the discussion of whether to include out Deer Spring, some of those remote areas that are, you know, a complete different animal. And that's the reason that they pushed an idea that failed and got outvoted and has set things back from even getting reasonable fire protection rates on the homes just outside of the city limits. But I think that this House bill is addressing to force counties to go everywhere in more outlying cabin, you know, recreation properties like Deer Springs Ranch and those areas to still have some type of an assessment and some kind of a plan that, that again would be more lightning strikes and, you know, keeping that from building in, vegetated areas different than structure fires and, full-time resident homes and stuff that catch on fire that right now don't have coverage or have seen these, you know, can't get insurance or, you know, inflated insurance rates. So I just mentioned that. I think that this bill is going to fill that need of what, you know, Commissioner Myers or some have tried to include in the Vermilion Cliff Estate Special Service District. But again, I'm new to the board, so I don't know if that's been discussed very much by the DSROA board the last year or two, if there's been resistance of being involved or a desire to try to be involved. But there is no one solution fixes all, and trying to cover the, you know, couple of hundred homes along Highway D90 and the entrance of Johnson Canyon, I think is a complete different animal than Deer Springs Ranch or trying to tie in a whole bunch of non-contiguous properties.
And just for your information, that was kind of the consensus of members. So I think a lot of members did protest it the previous time. The board did not take an official action from the board the previous time, but a lot of members did. And we did do a survey, and the majority of the members felt like it was of a benefit to the members for the structural side. But I'll call and find out more what she was trying to do, and I'll keep everybody updated.
And I should mention House Bill 48 has not passed at this point.
It's Dirk,
I know this, what the Southern Utah News says, but you can look on the Utah legislature and bill tracker, and it's been in its third reading at this point.
Okay, well, that's good news.
I always take what you see in the Southern Utah News with a bit of a grain of salt.
Well, I concur.
All right, Dan, are you done? And thanks for bringing that up. I didn't have any idea about it. Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay. Anyone else? All right, open forum's done. The next meeting is scheduled for March 8th at 1000 hours. Any problem with that?
At the ranch?
That's a good question. Do we think we should throw caution to the wind and
I think we should schedule it, and then maybe it'll bring snow, so then we can reschedule it.
So you're saying that we should do it at the ranch, but the ranch and or Zoom, and if it snows, we just go to Zoom.
Yeah, if we can't get out there. Yeah.
Definitely TBD, just because of wind that technically happens in March. Because that would make the Zoom not likely to work.
Outside?
Yeah.
Well, we can meet in the garden cabin's all torn apart, huh? I was going to say we can meet in the garden cabin.
Well, no, it's not that torn apart. We couldn't meet in the garden cabin.
All right, Brent, you make the call. We can certainly schedule it for at the ranch and see what happens as we get closer.
Okay.
Put whatever your decision is in the meeting, in the minutes.
Well, I'd like to call it for the ranch and Zoom, of course, for those who don't want to travel out there. But we have the option of being outdoors if it's nice, and or the garden cabin if it's cold and we need to have a fire or something like that.
Sounds good. That's what's in the meeting minutes.
I make a motion we adjourn.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All right. Thanks, everyone.